Jim, those guitars can only mean one thing.
What's that, Mark?
You're going to tell us.
Oh, should I tell you?
Yes.
All right. Well, they only mean one thing, and that means it's time for our show, That Classic Rock Show on WHRU, Huntley Community Radio, the mighty 101.5 FM, and it's also on demand. Did you know that?
Yes, I know that. And I'm Jim's partner at crime, Mark Plotnick. Jimmy's your radio voice primed and ready for today's show?
I'm all primed, dude.
All right. So let's begin by telling new listeners what we do around here. Our weekly shows revolve around the theme with music, backstories, opinions, and interviews covering all genres of rock music from the 1950s to the present.
Mark and I are authors of the book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today. And our book is part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's library and archives and features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by my co-host, a guy who was sort of a punk in his youth.
In my youth?
In your youth.
Okay. Well, are you accusing my mother and my father of raising some kind of ruffian?
No. I think they tried, but, you know, you're not the best.
I didn't come out too good. Yeah. Well, all right, I forgive you. So what's today's show about?
Well, I'm glad you asked, so people know at home what we're going to talk about. From 1965 through 1984, four New York City establishments served as the nexus of underground culture and music. Two of those clubs, one was Café Wa. I love saying that, Café Wa.
Yeah, it has a question mark after it.
Yeah, I know.
That's good.
Well, I was trying to uplift my voice there, Café Wa.
You did a great job.
Yeah, and the other was Café Agogo. Boy, try to say those really fast. And both were in Manhattan's Greenwich Village.
That's true. But they were not the venues that made New York City ground zero for glam, punk, and new wave.
You are correct, sir. The two most memorable establishments that put glam rock, punk rock, and new wave on the map were Max's Kansas City, which was on Park Avenue, and there was also the CBGB located in the city's Bowery.
Well, whatever your thoughts are about these music trends, they were nothing more than outgrowths of rock music, and rock music has always been about rebelling against the status quo, even when that status quo was rock itself.
Well said, sir. But as I've said many times, it's all just rock and roll to me.
You have. You've told me many times.
And I'll say it again. It's all just rock and roll to me. But today's show, we're going to focus primarily on Max's Kansas City and the acts that were closely associated with that place.
Yeah, Jim, but sometimes it's difficult to draw a line because several of the acts played both venues. But CBGB was more of a hardcore punk club, and their main acts at the beginning were the Ramones and a band called Television. So, Jim, tell us what made Max's Kansas City so unique, and just for simplicity's sake, let's just refer to the joint as Max's.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay. Boy, you are just so demanding today.
I am.
Okay. Well, for starters, it was both a restaurant and a club where musicians, poets, writers, entertainers, models, politicians, socialites, and offbeat types like you mingled, ate, drank like me, conversed, gawked like you, and performed like neither of us.
You left out the debauchery.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a family show, so we'll leave that to the books. Well, the original Max's ran from 1965 to 1974, and it reopened under new ownership in 1975, but closed again at the end of 1981.
Okay, who was Max?
Actually, there was no Max.
Oh, no Max?
No Max directly. We know there's Maxes. There's Maxes out there, but nobody associated with the establishment. The original owner was an entrepreneur and restaurateur named Mickey Ruskin, and apparently he felt the name Max was a friendly enough place for a restaurant. And as for the Kansas City part, steaks were on the menu. It was a restaurant. So he thought, why not use the name of a city known for its steakhouses?
Okay, I'll buy all that.
Yeah,
all right. I guess that makes sense.
Sure, it does.
Well, here's the cool thing about original owner Mickey Ruskin. He was a man who championed the arts, and although he was a Cornell law grad, he had a soft heart for artsy types struggling to make ends meet and who needed a place to be, you know, felt welcome. Jimi Hendrix had a great quote, and that is, Max's Kansas City was a place where you could let your freak flag fly.
Yep. And because Max was an early hangout for Andy Warhol and his entourage, It became one of the city's hottest night spots, and many future Rock and Roll Hall of Famers played and hung out there.
Well, let's get into some music here and talk about some of those Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. Let's begin with Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground. Lou once said that he would have starved if it wasn't for Max's owner feeding him all the time for 3 years. So let's listen to Lou Reed with a full stomach, I hope, and the Velvet Underground performing the song Rock and Roll, and this is from the band's 1970 LP, Loaded.
When she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all. Every time she puts on the radio, there was nothing going down at all. Not at all. Then one fine morning, she puts on a New York station. You know, she don't believe what she heard at all. She started shaking to that fine, fine music. You know, her life was saved by rock.
That was Rock and Roll by Lou Reed. Well, here's another interesting story about Lou Reed. His well-known song, Walk on the Wild Side, referred to several characters in Andy Warhol's circle who hung out at the VIP back room at Max's. And from what I've read, most of the waitresses at Max's did not like working that back room.
Well, I know one waitress who enjoyed it.
Who was that?
Well, that's Deborah Harry.
Ah.
Yeah, she would go on to form Blondie, along with guitarist Chris Stein. And as we all know, Blondie was one of the pioneering bands of the new wave music scene way back in the mid-70s. Deborah and the band were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2006. So let's play one of my favorite Blondie songs. Here is One Way
or Another.
I'm gonna win ya, I'm gonna get you, get you.
Is it all right to say that Blondie, Deborah Harry, was a looker in her day?
She was a very nice-looking
okay.
lady.
She was a model, too. Well, you're listening to That Classic Rock Show on WHRU Huntley Community Radio 101.5. Another person who could be found in the back room at Max's was Patti Smith, who desired to be a beat poet, by the way.
And Patty's one of my favorites. And according to her book, not her book, but the book, An Oral Histories of Max's, Patti Smith lacked some confidence early on.
But
she had ambition and a New Jersey toughness that served her well throughout her multifaceted career.
That's true, Jim. And in 2007, she was voted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So it's time for some Patti Smith music from her 1978 album, Easter. Here's the song, Because the Night.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Because the night belongs to love. Because the night belongs to life. Because the
Love that song. That is
great
really
song.
Good. Patti Smith is one of the co-writers. Mark, do you know who was the other co-writer?
I do.
Who?
It was, to the best of my knowledge, it was Bruce Springsteen.
Yep, another.
And he started the song, but my understanding is it was an incomplete song, and he was having a problem finishing it, and they decided to give it to Patti Smith. So,
well, she did a great job.
She did a great
it.
Job.
Well, the writer and journalist Drew Wardell once described the original Max's as a place where artists and bohemians ran the show before corporate America took over.
Yeah, that's for sure, Jim. Some crazy stuff went out at Max's, and here's an example. New York Dolls frontman David Johansen recalled seeing a performance where Iggy Pop cut himself with glass and then rolled around in the pieces, leading to more bleeding. And according to Johansen, he thought this guy had a death wish because he had never seen anything quite like it. But in the audience was a fledgling musician by the name of Alice Cooper. And this is according to Johansen. Alice Cooper wrapped up Iggy Pop in a blanket and took him to the hospital.
Well, Iggy Pop certainly is known as the godfather of punk, and he certainly deserves that title.
Yeah.
He was a terrific lyricist and lead singer for the proto-punk band, The Stooges, and they were voted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2010. So here's a taste of Iggy Pop and The Stooges doing their song Down on the Street from their 1970 album, Funhouse.
James, that's our producer. Take the glass away from Jim Samario, please. He's bleeding on the microphone.
Well, I really was getting into that song. I thought I was Iggy Pop there for a second. Very Doors-like song.
The same kind of howling scream as Jim Morrison. Very
close. Yeah. Well, there were a lot of future Rock and Roll Hall of Famers that paid their dues at Max's, and we're going to get back to talking about Alice Cooper. Before playing Max's, the band had released two albums that went largely unnoticed.
Yeah, I think, weren't those Zappa-produced albums? Or he was out in California at the time. But anyways, sometimes it's being in the right place at the right time. For one of his first assignments, the legendary super producer Bob Ezrin was instructed by a boss at Warner Brothers to give Alice Cooper the bad news. They would not be signing the band.
But when Ezrin saw Alice Cooper perform at Max's, he knew he was witnessing something groundbreaking. So against his employer's wishes, he offered Alice Cooper the contract, and the result was the 1971 album, the great album, Love It to Death.
Yeah, and real quickly, when Ezrin went back to his boss at Warner Brothers, he thought he was going to be fired, and the boss says, you know what your punishment is? You're producing that album, and it better do well. Well, that was actually Alice Cooper's first commercially successful LP, and in 2001, the band made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So from the album that made everyone take notice of Alice Cooper, here is the teenage angst song.
That's angst.
Well, the angst song is I'm 18. My version. I'm 73 and I like it.
Yeah, you know, I'm 70 and I don't
I'm
like it.
I'm a boy
it.
And I, a man.
My back hurts.
I just and you're bleeding all over the place.
Because of the Iggy Pop song.
Yeah. Well, the New York Dolls might not be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but their influence on glam and punk far exceeded their commercial success. So they too could be found hanging out and performing at Max's.
And by the way, there's a famous Bob Gruen photo of David Johansen and David Bowie sitting together at Max's. Before it became an international phenom, David Bowie was just another unusual-looking musician hanging out at Max's during his Ziggy Stardust days.
Well, so let's honor both the New York Dolls, who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know whether Jim agrees. And David Bowie, who is and who became one of rock's most respected performers. First up, we'll play the New York Dolls song Personality Crisis from their 1974 debut album. We're going to start with Personality Crisis, and we return from part one. We go into part two of our show. We're going to play David Bowie's song Starman.
He was
That was Personality Crisis by the New York Dolls.
And I'm going through one right now.
You always have been. Well, we hope you enjoyed part one of the classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU 101.5 FM, where we were talking about Max's Kansas City and its importance to glam rock, punk rock, and new wave music.